Welcome, this is Brian from Brian's Spain Domain, and we are here with Spanish History 101, Episode 5. So far, we've learned that there were several cultures that lived on the Iberian Peninsula before the Romanization of a land that would be called Hispania. These included the Celts, the Iberians, Tartessos, and others. But it was only a matter of time before these cultures would come into contact with civilization from other parts of the Mediterranean, cultures which appeared to be developing faster than they were and who eventually would have a profound impact on the local populations, as well as the history of Spain down the road. We are talking about the Phoenicians, the Greeks, and the Carthaginians, who were basically the Phoenicians' descendants. The Phoenicians in particular had a big impact early on in the southern part of Spain, mainly in the area which is now Andalusia. Traditionally, it was thought that they had dropped their anchors sometime between 1300 and 1100 BCE, but there is no evidence verifying that claim. Remains only go back as far as 800 BCE, so we'll stick to that date for the moment until something appears which proves otherwise. Who were the Phoenicians and where did they come from? The who part hasn't been fully determined, but we definitely know where they came from. They were originally based in and around two cities, Tyre and Sidon, which are located in what is today Lebanon. These city-states were independent for many years, but later became basically vassal states under a string of empires, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and the Persians. This means that they had to obey the main power's laws, pay heavy tributes, but in return could enjoy certain freedoms, especially commercial activity, which is what interested them the most. It is doubtful that they ever considered themselves to be one nation, but rather a kind of conglomerate of city-states. Phoenicia was a small culture in a land with limited natural resources, meaning that they were sort of at the mercy of their more powerful neighbors. That meant they had to tread carefully and focus most of their efforts on manufacturing and commercial trade. Probably their most well-known product of the time was their rich purple dye. It's a fame that has lasted to this day and one of the longest-lasting fashion statements in history. The deep purple color is still associated with royalty and is still visible on official wardrobe of many monarchs. What made this dye so coveted was the fact that it was extremely costly to produce. The color was extracted from a snail-like mollusk called a murex, as well as another called the trumpet shell. Because this process was so painstaking and the mollusk so small and not that common, the final product was an absolute luxury, turning the color purple into one of the greatest status symbols of all time. It wouldn't be until the 19th century that this fancy color would become available to the rest of us commoners. The Phoenicians expanded their commercial empire by doing something few civilizations had the capability or business instinct of doing. They colonized the southern half of the Mediterranean, especially the coast of North Africa, and basically set up a network of trading posts where they could build their community, not unlike the way young entrepreneurs these days build their businesses around social networking. Without a doubt, its most famous and successful colony would be the city of Carthage, which we will talk about in a few minutes. So we know that the Phoenicians manufactured and traded in just about anything back then. They engaged through bartering and swapping, but they also accepted a different form of payment which had become popular at the time. It had started in Lydia, which is in present-day Turkey, and it was called money. Cynicism aside, the importance of this innovation in commerce and economy, and society for that matter, cannot be overstated. How people look at the way their world operates would never be the same. Ironically, on a side note, you never see this included on a list of the most important inventions in history, even the long ones, the top 25 lists. And yet, few inventions have had such a profound impact on human history. Anyway, the reason why I'm mentioning this is that minting coins required metals, which was one commodity the Phoenicians were especially interested in. As they headed westward in the Mediterranean, they would discover a land that was particularly rich in metals. That land was Iberia, or ancient Spain. The Phoenicians, would be the first to establish a working relationship with the locals, specifically along the southern coast. They made their first contacts with people on the Mediterranean side, but they later went through the Straits of Gibraltar, which back then was known as the Pillars of Hercules, and into the Atlantic. It was just on the other side that they are said to have established a relationship with a local culture that many assume was Tartessos, a civilization which was already engaging in the practice of mining, but in a cruder form. The Phoenicians had the know-how to improve the technique and shared it with the Tartessians, who took advantage of it. Iberia was a source of iron, tin, gold, and especially silver, and lucky for the Phoenicians, silver was just what they were looking for. The locals extracted metals from places like the Rio Tinto mines in Huelva, one of the largest silver lodes in ancient times. In exchange for it, the Phoenicians provided fabrics, perfumes, and dyes. The newcomers contributed more than just commerce and business to the native communities there. Other major additions included the introduction of different crops like the olive tree and the wine grape, and, obviously, how to make olive oil and wine. These contributions cannot be emphasized enough, as Spain continues to lead the world in olive oil production and stands out as one of the biggest and finest makers of wine. They also brought with them their writing systems, one of the first phonetic-based alphabets in history. Examples of Iberian writings with Phoenician lettering have been found in many places. The experts can pronounce the words, the problem is they just don't know what they mean. And oh yes, one more thing. The name Spain itself, no less, was a Phoenician contribution. Traditionally, the translation for this word was Land of the Rabbits, but recent studies suggest the meaning has more to do with forging metals, which would certainly make sense. Once again, there is no consensus on this, but I admit I prefer the rabbit theory. The Phoenicians injected this land with a sense of civilization. Some of Spain's oldest cities originated during these times. Many of these towns were highly developed and possessed foundries for metalworking and factories. These cities included Gadir, Cadiz, Malacca, Malaga, Onuba, Huelva, Sexy, which is a funny name, but today is Almuñeca, and Ibiza in the Balearic Islands. Cadiz, for example, is one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities in Europe and is considered to be the oldest in Spain. It seems that, for the most part, the Phoenicians established a friendly relationship with the Tartessians and other tribes. Tensions would only rise later in the 6th century when the local peoples probably wanted to free themselves from the commercial obligations imposed on them. In any event, by the middle of the millennium, the Phoenicians were beginning to lose their grip on their commercial empire. The Assyrians had succumbed to the powerful Babylonians, who laid siege to the city of Tyre, and though it managed to survive for 13 years, it eventually capitulated in 573. And shortly after that, the Persian Empire took over. Luckily for them, their colonies would carry on with the tradition, and the biggest and most important of all was Carthage. This port in present-day Tunisia quickly turned from sort of a low-key community into one of the most important urban centers in all of classical times. But we're still not ready to get to them. Let's talk about something first. The Phoenicians weren't the only ones striking deals with the local communities on the far side of the Mediterranean. The Greeks, another seafaring nation, were also interested in what the Iberian Peninsula had to offer. The Greeks took a different route. Preferring to stay mainly in the northern half of the Mediterranean, they explored and built their own network of partners and colonies on the Italian peninsula, Corsica, and Sardinia, and also southern France. They founded a famous city there called Massalia, which is known today as Marseille. Massalia would become their hub in that part of the Mediterranean, and from there they could sail down the coast to what would become Spain, in particular Catalonia and Valencia. Their first big city, and the most important one, was Empúries, which was founded around 575 BCE and existed until the 6th century CE. The name, however, has made it to this day. Empordà is a region in the province of Girona in Catalonia, and it is derived from Empúries, and it means the markets. If that reminds you of the word emporium, well, it should. They are related. Today, Empordà is known for its beauty, scenery, and fertile land. It is in the northeast corner of Spain in Catalonia, and it's near the border of France. Other cities founded by the Greeks included Alicante and what is today the popular beach resort of Denia. These two are in the region of Valencia. Some believe that the Greeks may have even made it as far as Tartessos, but no one really knows for sure. So, northeastern Spain and part of eastern Spain were the two main areas where the Greeks lived and traded. They didn't penetrate very far into the peninsula, but they didn't do that in general anywhere. As a rule, they stuck to the coast. It's hard to say just how much influence the Hellenistic culture had on the Iberian Peninsula, but considering that they were trading partners with Iberia for centuries, in some cases off and on, and founded several important towns, their influence on those areas would have been notable. What was their legacy? Well, to begin with, the name Iberia. The origin is not 100% certain, but there seems to be a relationship between the name Ebro, as in the Ebro River, although the Greeks also called a region around the Black Sea Iberia too, so it's all a little bit confusing. But what we do know is that the name comes from Greek. The Greeks also contributed their commercial know-how, their excellent pottery skills, and urban design and architecture. And just like the Phoenicians, they too brought the olive tree, the grapevine, cereals, and some say even garlic, essentially the basics of today's Spanish diet. They also showed the locals their excellent artistic techniques. In fact, some of ancient Spain's finest examples of sculptures from the time seem to have been a clear influence from Greek art. These include the famous Lady of Elche and the Lady of Baza. The thing is, the Greeks never had a firm hold on that part of the Mediterranean, which doesn't mean they didn't try to compete. The problem was they were up against some pretty stiff resistance coming from a young rising star. You guessed it, Carthage. Finally, let's get to Carthage. Carthage, as we know, was a colony of Phoenicia. The thing is, the Phoenicians were not big on actively controlling the lands they colonized. They didn't dominate them, probably because they lacked the manpower and the means to do so, and probably because they didn't see the need to. Many of the Phoenician colonies were small, but Carthage, for reasons we won't get into now, was different. Founded in 814 BCE, it grew very quickly early on. And while it kept close to the motherland, so to speak, in 650 it broke away and began to grow on its own. This was made easier by Phoenicia's decline, creating a kind of power vacuum in the western Mediterranean that the Carthaginians gladly filled. The Carthaginians showed ever-increasing interest in Iberia and the Balearic Islands, mainly for their natural resources. They took over many of the former Phoenician cities and even founded their own, like Cartagena. The etymology of this city is funny. The name Carthage itself comes from the Phoenician for new city, and Cartagena comes from Cartago Nova, or New Carthage. So I guess that sort of makes it new city. Carthage shared its founder's love of trade and commerce, but with a difference. Unlike the Phoenicians, the Carthaginians felt the need to back their interests up with a solid military and especially a navy. They wanted tighter control over the western end of the Mediterranean. This shift in policy would raise concern among the Greeks and lead to tension between the two. The Carthaginians would eventually team up with the Etruscans, Rome's predecessors, to oust the Greeks from that theater of trade operations. This took place in 540 BCE at the Battle of Alalia between Corsica and Sardinia. Once that happened, Carthage and the young Republic of Rome would soon be heading on a collision course that would change the fate of Spanish history forever. But we'll get to that story in the next episode. For now, we hope you've enjoyed this podcast from Brian's Spain Domain. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them with us. We love to hear them. You can also follow us on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos, or if you wish to support us, check us out on Patreon. Stay safe and well, and hasta pronto.